following podcast has language and mature subject matter. Parental discretion advised. You're listening to Daddy Issues with your host, Matt Fuller and Race Cooper, a podcast about older gay guys talking about whatever.
Hey, it's Matt Fuller.
Hey, it's Race Cooper, but friends call me Coop.
And welcome to
Daddy Issues.
Hey, Matt, I brought a porn crush on today, and not just for you. Someone I've been digging for a long time.
Well, that was selfish of you.
Yeah, it was. You know, and I don't feel bad about it. Because we've had a ton of your porn crushes on the podcast. I will start by saying this porn actor has been working in the adult industry for the past 7 years, but recently seems to be heard on everyone's lips because of the magnitude of productions and online videos he's featured in. He identifies as he, him, and also as bisexual, even though he is primarily in gay porn. Please welcome to the Daddy Issues podcast, trans porn star actor and trans sex educator, Trip Richards.
Hello.
Did I get that right?
You did. That was a beautiful introduction. I feel sexy already.
You are sexy. Oh my God, you're so sexy.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. This is like super exciting. And I cannot wait to talk with you. I have to admit, I've been doing a lot of research, Trip. So you've got a great OnlyFans channel.
Oh,
and I love
you.
The research I get to do for this podcast.
I mean, it is such a hard job.
It has been at times.
Well, I am delighted to help with that.
So, well, thank you so much for being here. And let's just jump into this. Coop and I have had a number of discussions around trans people and trans rights. On episode 21, we had Aaron Papp Vanceliet, where we discussed non-binary parenting and being a trans parent. But today, we are going to do a different perspective in trans and talk to you about transsexuality. So here's my first question for you. What is a good way to let a trans friend know that you are supportive and an ally and you want to know more about them from hormones to surgery and you don't want to make assumptions or otherwise trip over your own privilege?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. I do have to start kind of with this disclaimer that I always give when I'm interviewed, which is that there's this tendency to place an individual, place a minority individual on this pedestal. I can only answer for myself. I think any trans person you talk to is going to have a little bit of a different answer on this one. So I feel like there is that tendency that like I become the authority figure on trans issues, and I'm not. But I'll answer, you know, from the best of my understanding. And I would say to answer that question, beware of expecting emotional labor from anyone else, especially a minority. If it's basically, if your question is something that you could answer with a quick Google search, go ahead and Google it. You know, if it's something that would show up in like a trans 101 course, if there was such a thing, don't ask your friend. You know, we are already fielding so many questions, so many intrusive questions. Educate yourself first. Not necessarily the sexiest answer, but that's the reality.
No, I mean, that's a great answer. And I also, you know, I think that we're all members of various minority communities, communities, everyone here on this podcast. And, you know, we're often asked to be like, well, how do you feel? And yes, we all all we can speak for is our own experience.
And I would just say that if you aren't good enough friends with someone to know how to ask that question in a really healthy, really affirming way, you probably shouldn't be asking them, you know, about their body parts. Like that is such an intimate place to have a conversation. You don't just ask a, you know, an acquaintance, a tangential friend, those kind of things.
Right. Matt and I had like really long discussions on how to frame that question. And I come from a background of having trans friends and trans experience a little bit, but not like a lot. But, you know, for me, I'm like, this is an intrusive question. But I understand that most people, that's kind of they just go to.
Absolutely.
And we're just kind of, they can't help themselves, even though it's such an intrusive question. And we thought, how do we frame this for listeners to understand that better? That it's such an intrusive question. And if you haven't done the work yourself into educating yourself about whatever you're curious about, why do you do that more than putting your friend in an uncomfortable situation or the person that you've met?
Yeah, precisely. Absolutely. And if somebody comes to me where I can already tell that they've done that research, you know, they've done their trans 101, I can tell because they ask better questions. They ask questions that are precise. They ask questions that are scientific or nuanced, or they even ask a question that's specifically about my experience. They don't ask me to, you know, tell them about being trans, something very, very vague like that. I can tell if that person is coming from a place of a little bit more education and a little bit more compassion, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, you're in this your position now of like a lot of people knowing who you are, like your name. Mm-hmm. And with that, do you feel that kind of responsibility of, even though it's only going to come from your perspective, do you feel that responsibility of representation?
I do, because I answered the question that you posed me kind of in this hypothetical situation of, you know, the hypothetical person with the hypothetical trans friend. Now, if I step back and I answer that question for myself, Trip Richards, it's a little different. You know, my answer is a little bit different. Right. My answer there is that I've chosen, but it's more like I have accidentally ended up as a public figure. And therefore, I have kind of, you know, bought into the fact that I'm going to get asked certain questions. I'm going to be, you know, I am a visible person that way. And people are going to ask really awkward questions, you know, ill thought out questions. That's just part of the deal. And honestly, at this point, especially being in the industry I am, my skin is so thick. Like, I honestly don't have a good goddamn at this point. But, you know, it is what it is. Yeah. But I also would rather that, you know, bumbling person with their awkward, intrusive questions, I'd rather that they hit me up, because I can handle that shit, as opposed to they hit up like some, you know, young, early in transition person who's just like, oh my God, like I feel so invalidated.
Right. How do you, as a trans gay porn star, wish to refer to your sexual parts that doesn't diminish you, but at the same time makes trans sex sexy?
So again, I'm going to keep saying this and sound like a broken record. I'm just going to answer for me, because I know a lot of other trans guys in porn who have different terminology. Mine is super, super simple. I refer to my clitoris in female terminology as cock, because that makes more sense. They're analogous tissues, and I prefer that term. And I refer to my vagina as front hole, because, you know, it's in the front. That just seems nice, simple, straightforward. Yeah. I'm one of those people, I'm not very easily offended. So if something else like slips out in the course of a scene, I roll with it. You know, it's not a big deal. But that to me are the words that are simple, they're affirming. And I don't think you really need to market a trans person's body to make it sexy. Like, I don't think you need some special terminology and, you know, bells and whistles and razzle dazzle to make it sexual. I go with just like whatever's comfortable, and that's sexy enough.
Whatever works for you and whatever makes it hot for you. It's really individualistic.
Yeah, and I guess thinking about it, if I want to throw in a little bit of nuance there, if I was doing like a super, super verbal role play, jerk off instruction, something like that, I might think a little bit more about my words. But if you're just like having sex or jerking off or whatever, you don't really need to like talk about those details. It doesn't need to be about words. It can just be about like the whole experience.
Can I ask you another question about terminology?
Yeah, of course.
As you came to settle on yours, was it just, it was innate and kind of intuitive for you? Or did you experiment with a variety of things and settle on it? Or
I'm trying to think. It's been a while. I think that the idea of cock always made sense to me, because I was a guy, and once you understand, you know, a little bit of the biology of like analogous tissues, it just makes complete sense, because it's the same damn thing.
Why cock and not dick?
That's a good question. I don't have a good answer. It just like comes off my tongue more easily.
I like the sound of cock, but more than dick. I mean, okay. Personally.
Maybe that was my reason. I don't know.
He did it for you, Coop. He did it for you.
I've learned that by now. Thank you very much.
Are you sure about that?
It revolves around me.
in my head, Trip.
And I'm trying to think about front hole. I probably like heard that from other trans guys and was like, oh, that makes sense. Front hole, asshole, you know, that kind of just It just made sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have a gender to it.
Right.
Right. Coop and I have chatted before about BBC being a very racist term and gay porn because of its dehumanizing effects on Black gay actors. So I thought we might take a moment to chat about the many ways that trans people are problematically depicted in porn.
And the question then for me is, how long do you have? Because I have many, many, many feelings about this.
Go for it.
We'll clock each one.
Okay. I gotta say, starting with the good news is that we would not be having this discussion if there were not more trans people in porn. So that's a big win. Right. Hooray, hooray. I'm glad that we're having that discussion. That said, though, there's a lot of typecasting. And I'm gonna speak not just about myself here, but some of the other trans guys who I know who do porn, ranging from studio to OnlyFans to webcamming, like the whole spectrum. There's a lot of typecasting. There's a lot of expectation that we're going to be submissive, and there's a lot of expectation we're going to be bottoms and total bottom. And it feels really, really heteronormative. Like, it feels really tired. It's like the same narrative. It's been my issue, you know, forever with gay porn, you know, cisgender gay. Like, if two actors walk onto the set and I can tell from the moment they walk on who's going to be topping and who's going to be bottoming, because you have, you know, the big aggressive muscle guy as top, I'm just like, okay, I've seen this already. Like, this is so tired. So I want to change it up. I want to see it being changed up. It's still not being changed up enough, in my opinion, in trans porn, because we see these same tropes over and over.
Yeah, I can relate to the thug videos during my time in porn a long while ago.
Okay. Exactly.
Keep going.
Okay, so again, I wanted to just make clear, though, that just by existing, you know, just by being here, I think that's so disruptive to, like, the standard old narrative. Like, trans people being here shakes people out of their comfortable little boxes. Like, it's a beautiful thing. The other big issue that I have that I imagine you'll have some, you know, understanding of or agreement with, is we're not seeing people of color. You know, there's like no trans men of color. And we're not seeing much in terms of diverse body types. Like, all the trans guys in porn, myself included, equally guilty of this, were very, very cisgender passing. Lots of body hair, beard, lots of muscles, standard, you know, traditionally masculine body shape. And I mean, that's great. I'm not going to diminish how comfortable I am with my body or the other beautiful guys out there. But if the acceptance of trans men in porn only goes that far and then it stops there, it's kind of like, okay, what have we really achieved?
We haven't really achieved much.
Yeah, exactly.
We're just doing, the same stamp that we're doing from the 80s to the 90s.
We made a trans clone.
Look, it comes in trans.
Exactly. So it's like, unless we're really all, as an industry and also as viewers, frankly, open to discussing, like, all those intersecting issues of trans passability, of body shape, of ableism, of color, it's like, until all of those get talked about and addressed in some way, we're still, as you say, just say, you know, seeing the same porn video over and over again, except there happens to be a vagina in it. Woo.
Right. I think that's the power of, like, OnlyFans and Just for Fans now. And
exactly.
More autonomy for all these different body shapes and all this glorious sex positivity and beautiful people of every kind of diversity.
Yeah, the fan pages have just, like, revolutionized things. And, I mean, I can talk about that all day, too.
Porn is a brutal industry. There's nothing more dehumanizing, I am fairly certain, than having to be
But the money's good.
And I gotta say, I mean, in one way I get the dehumanizing aspect, but I've also felt way more dehumanized in my life working for $7 an hour at some front desk member services, customer service. Like, honestly, for me, notwithstanding the intrusive questions or whatever other bullshit, porn has given me so much more, like, self-affirming, self-confidence, connections with so many great people, and frankly, the platform to have this kind of a conversation. So I will never diss porn as a profession. And I work in a lot of advocacy, you know, sex worker advocacy stuff, because, I mean, it's not for everyone. I totally get that.
We've explained to people the industry part, because I was more on the industry working with the studios than what is available to people available now for Just for Fans and OnlyFans.
Fair enough.
I think it's kind of a blessing that people are able to now have this much autonomy over their sexual presentation and how they want to personify themselves on camera or and show sexuality. And so when we talk about issues of porn, we're really talking about porn industry more than we're talking about those that are able to have the agency.
Yeah, porn studio versus, I mean, yeah. You know, OnlyFans is a part of the porn industry now, but you know, yeah. They're not studios. So
That's fair. And I have to date never shot a studio scene. And as far as I know, I never will. And that is such an amazing thing of kind of being in this moment in the industry to be where I am and not need to go through all the gatekeeping of the studios. And, you know, I'm sure that the script that they would give me would be even worse than the issues that I see.
If I'm thinking of like studio trans porn, the only person I can think of is Buck.
Well, there's a few more.
There might be a few more, but I'm like,
Buck is of a different generation. You know, he is such a groundbreaker, trailblazer that way. But, you know, throwing out some names here, Luke Hudson, Connor Atlas, Victor Belmont, and Ari Coyote, who I all know personally and have worked with some of them, they've all shot in studio scenes. And that's just been in the last like maybe two-ish years. So there's definitely that intersection of like the self-made, just on the fan site platforms, or a lot of us start out in webcamming, and now is finding its way into studio. But that's where I kind of see those narratives really showing up that can be really problematic.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem with the industry that has kind of been used to the certain script of doing the same thing that has been passed down from like a long time.
We need some hot white gay guys to act like straight men.
Precisely.
And when they realize, you know, that the world has changed and they need to kind of like not do that anymore, then they can actually welcome more diversity and try to have more diverse directors in charge getting that vision out.
You know, if you'd asked me like 5 years ago, which is when I started, I did adult industry stuff before I transitioned. I stepped away for a little while, like a year or so, and then I got back in 5 years ago. So if you'd asked me 5 years ago that question of like, why aren't there more trans men in porn and what are the issues and stuff, I would have told you what I was being told at the time, which is there's not a market for it. Like, it's a tiny little niche. There just isn't a market. And I kind of ignored that, or completely ignored it. And I actually started on Chatterbait, you know, started webcamming, got a massive following. And then, you know, as soon as OnlyFans and Just for Fans came out, I really transitioned that direction. But, you know, if you asked me 5 years ago, I would have thought that was the problem. And now I think that the problem is much more so that there is a massive potential market, and the issue is finding the connection to that market, or letting that market find us. I still literally every day hear from folks who are, you know, viewers, potential purchasers, whatever, who are like, I didn't know, you know, you existed. Like they didn't know trans men existed. And part of me is like, okay, guys, it's 2020. Like, we should know that these things exist. But the other part of me is thinking,
marketing kind of push behind you enough.
Well, there needs to be more. Like that's my other response after like Get With The Times is, what can I do? You know, I'm a businessman first and foremost. What can I do as a businessman to reach out to all of those potential customers who don't even know what their desires are because they didn't know it existed? So I feel like just the past couple of years, that mindset has really, really changed. And I guess I'm excited to see, you know, in 5 more years what it would be.
When you're, you know, evaluating scene partners, you know, particularly with a cis actor, is there a degree of education that you just kind of build into the process? Or is that something you're really looking for when you're looking at scene partners?
So when you asked that question, I was like, crap, I probably should educate them a little bit more. So lately I've just kind of like jumped into it, and I was like, maybe that wasn't fair to them. One of them, he was like amazing, and I had no idea that I was his first. And he didn't tell me until after, because I was too dumb to ask. And he just like dove in, and it was like some of the best sex I've ever had in my life. And I was like, you know, this is great. And then later we're chatting and he was like, yeah, that was my first time with a vagina. And I was like, oh, so I guess the good news
is natural.
That's what I told him. I was like, cool, natural. You know, instinct takes over, whatever. I don't know.
Right.
I'm trying to think back though, because when I first started, I'm not even going to say adult industry, but just like when I first started having sex with people as a trans person, having sex with cisgender guys as a trans person, I definitely did do kind of like, you know, the 30-second primer on my body, you know, here's what's what, here's what feels good, this is what you should call it, et cetera, et cetera. And I think I've sort of just let that go by the wayside over the last few years because, you know, I've had good experiences with people. And I mean, my personal opinion is that my body is not very complicated. So it's kind of like, you know, whatever we need to figure out, we'll figure it out on the fly.
What do you think of TERFs?
So for those who don't know, TERF stands for Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist. And I think that that word is an oxymoron, because if you are a feminist, that means, you know, if your feminism is not including women of color, is not include, let's just go ahead and say people of color, people of different physical abilities, people of different socioeconomic classes, people of different body and gender configurations, your feminism is trash. So it is a complete appropriation of that term. I didn't come up with it. I'm not that clever, but there's a different phrase and acronym, which I prefer, which is feminist appropriating radical transphobes. The acronym is FART. And I think that's a little bit more appropriate because it is an appropriation of feminism. They're very exclusionary. Most of their ideas make no sense. I will say that farts are worse for trans women. They don't go after trans guys as much. We hear a little bit of their rhetoric, but mostly they're just super exclusionary to trans women. Kind of like, you know,
What's the T in fart stand for?
Feminist appropriating radical transphobes.
So, like, we're talking about J.K. Rowling, right?
She has risen to the top of the feminist appropriating pile, but she is definitely not alone, and they have been around for a while. Basically, like if your feminism is not inclusive, don't even pretend that you're a feminist. Don't pretend you're a humanist. Anything.
Yeah. J.K. Rowling is a fart.
Yep. Yep.
Stinky. A big stinky fart.
You got it.
Yeah.
So we had a fan requested topic on Twitter. I'm going to hop over to our next topic here, which is the isms, where we talk about cultural struggles such as racism, sexism, and ageism. Mm-hmm. And it was a listener request to talk about biphobia. So I thought you might be able to help us break it down on the isms today. And what is biphobia to you, Trip?
I would be happy to answer that. So I would first go ahead and define what is bisexuality. And the way I would define it is the capacity to be attracted to more than one gender, not necessarily in the same way and not necessarily to the same extent. And I think that's a little bit more expansive definition than we tend to use, which is that idea of, yeah, so he's into guys and girls. But what does that really mean? You know, he might be into guys and girls in different ways, in different times, and to different extents. So it is the capacity to be attracted to a variety of people. So if that's bisexuality, biphobia, which is a new term to me, but it made sense. I don't think it's really, though, fear of bi people so much as it is like fear of what they see in themselves, or hatred of what they see in themselves. But anyway, I think that my perspective on biphobia is really, really informed by being a trans person. It is informed to some extent by being bisexual, as I am. And trans people can be gay, they can be straight, they can be lesbian if they're trans women. They can be anywhere in that spectrum of, you know, labels or no labels or whatever. But as a trans person, I feel like regardless of our own orientation, we provoke in our partners this need to kind of reimagine their own identities. And I think that's the much more interesting part of the story. Like, it's not about my sexuality or sexual orientation. It's what I'm provoking in other people who watch me or have sex with me or anything else to think about, like, what's the essentials of their attraction? If somebody's into guys, what does that really mean? Is it just about dick? Like, that seems so limiting. Is it, you know, the way a guy smells, the way he walks, the way he talks, the way his personhood is? And I find that when I actually ask people, like, you know, why are you into men or why are you into women or whatever, so many of them have such a hard time really defining it because it is that combination of factors. And, you know, that to me is a true, like, expression of what you're into, is to start breaking that apart and saying, what are the essentials of that attraction? And, you know, as trans people, we kind of force those around us, our lovers or whatever, to start decoupling those pieces and saying, like, what's it really about?
And so biphobia to you is the capacity to not be able to be okay with any of that in any sense?
Well, if I had to define biphobia specifically, I guess it would be, yeah, the not being okay with the bisexuality in oneself or the bisexuality in others. Often those are linked, you know, that we're afraid of what we see in ourselves. But I think I don't know if I really even like the biphobia now that I'm talking about it, because it seems to be coming much more from like this place of hate or backlash, as if somebody else's capacity to be attracted to whole, you know, all kinds of different things is in some way like, you know, limiting your attraction, when you know, really they have no relationship to each other. You know, other people's ability to enjoy lots of things doesn't detract from your ability to only enjoy one thing if you want.
We got this request as a topic, and for us, you know, I think the fan that was requesting it was on the means of there are people that are within straight community as well as the queer community.
Definitely within the queer community.
Definitely within the queer community that don't want to understand it or will mock it or will Absolutely. Be like, ew. Like,
you're not bisexual, you're just a gay that hasn't fully come out yet.
Right. Mm-hmm. And because we have those examples, how do we craft a definition of what that is?
Well, if I think of it in those terms, I would say that biphobia would not exist in a culture that did not have homophobia, because right. biphobia hits both straight, both. I want to be careful how I say this. It affects both people who are mostly straight and people who are mostly gay. For instance, right. a straight man who is legitimately straight, he's into women. But, you know, he's played around with guys a few times. That becomes like this deep, dark secret for him that does not let him explore, you know, what he might really be into. And it also becomes like this point of shame.
So the cage of masculinity.
Exactly. And it hits gay men, and I'm just talking guys here, but for women, similar. It hits gay men in the same way, because it's like they've worked so hard to split away from the dominant culture, you know, of heteronormativity. And then it feels like sort of a betrayal of that. Like, you know, right. they're sort of like they're traitors to this hard-won homosexual identity, when really those things should not be in opposition. And if we lived in a culture that was not so homophobic still, you know, such a deeply ingrained toxic masculinity and all that, it wouldn't be an issue. Like, it wouldn't even be a discussion to have. Then bisexuality would just be about, like, you know, what you're into in the moment, and it would be really up to each individual to imagine it and reimagine it for themselves.
You're kind of approaching bisexuality from this perspective of the ability to decouple gender norms with the essence of a person's sexuality.
Yes. So that's the part that I think specifically myself, speaking as a trans person, can really speak on. Because, like I said, it's not even about my sexual orientation. Like, that's almost irrelevant to it in this case. It's much more about that, what I provoke in partners, in lovers, in viewers, who are like, well, what am I now? Now, I personally maintain that if a gay identified man has sex with me or any other trans dude, he should still identify as gay. Like, he doesn't need to reimagine that. But if he chose to be like, maybe I should explore, maybe I am a little bi, that shouldn't be a bad thing. Like, he shouldn't feel like he's now a traitor. He shouldn't feel like he's now going to, you know, lose that gay identity that he's worked so hard for to, you know, carve out. It just shouldn't be as big a deal. You know, like, there just should be that space to explore. And instead, what I see are people who, I think you mentioned this, like, they can't really state a preference. They just get, you know, they just act like they're grossed out. You know, somebody should be able to say, hey, I'm not into that, or hey, I'm not into you. And that's fine. You know, said and done. But if somebody's like, ew, boobs, ew, pussy, like, that's the, you know, this really, this thing that they're so uncomfortable with, that tells me that they have something that needs to be worked out in their own identity. That tells me that they're, you know, uncomfortable and probably bisexual themselves. Because folks who are comfortable in their own identity, who are settled into their identity, they're comfortable enough to say, eh, not my thing, moving on. They don't, like, you know, sit around and troll about it.
Right.
And I mean, it's also like this point-based system approach to my sexuality, right? Like, you know, for every gay man I sleep with, I get 5 points towards being super gay. And, you know, every vagina I like slide back down by 50, you know, and the ability to still let someone else label you, right? And this decision that because I've done this or that, you know, that I can't claim my own sexuality and say like, hey, I'm gay and the this is what it means to me, or any of those other things.
So, right. I like that, because it really, each of us should be able to define what that label means for us. You know, my version, when I say gay, may mean something very different than yours, and that's completely okay. And we shouldn't, you know, get into an extended argument on Twitter of, no, that's not what gay means.
My gay is more authentic than your gay.
Exactly.
It's on TV more? Really?
Exactly. So, because it's more hetero, bro.
Definitely
more. See, hetero. Like the more hetero it is, the more authentically gay. There's the irony.
I think it's blonde and blue-eyed all the time.
There you go.
Totally.
So we've chatted a little bit about problematic representations. When we're talking about porn, do you want to, you know, take a moment to stop by any of the more problematic representations of bisexuality and porn?
Yeah, I do, because, you know, the answers that I've been giving here about bisexuality, biphobia, whatever, I've really not been thinking about them in porn context. I've been thinking about them much more like, you know, real world. But I feel like porn has yet a different issue. That's the fact that viewers have this really, really hard time, it seems like, differentiating real life from, you know, performance. Because I know so many, especially recently, there seems to be like a, I don't know, just a trend of it maybe, that people who I know are gay, like some of them are married gay, they've lived their life that way, they're in that community, they're comfortable in that community, but they also are fucking women on cam. And they have gotten so much backlash. Like there's the whole, you know, you're traitors, you're not real gay, no, nobody's really gay anymore. Like I see this stuff on Twitter and, you know, other formats. And I feel like
the badges that said you were gay, we have to take them back now.
Exactly. Right. And it's like they've lost their gay card. And first off, I'm like, okay, it shouldn't matter. Like, if they identify as gay, they identify as gay, end of story. But even more important, because it is porn, is like, we need to differentiate performance. Porn is performative. It's fantasy. Yeah. It's escapism. It's a paycheck. I mean, it's a lot of different things. And it should never be taken as like gospel truth of that person, of that actor. Like it is acting. If they're into it, even better. But I just feel like there's this huge backlash from fans that ends up making a lot of performers be like, you know, afraid to really explore what they're into or just do something for the hell of it. You know, I've done scenes where I'm just like, this is new. This is different. I don't have to be like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever done or ever seen. I do it because it's fun, it's different, and it does not change my core identity, or doesn't need to change my core identity. And like, it just seems like viewership has a really, really hard time sometimes decoupling those pieces and not getting angry about it.
Do you think that because there is very little to none sexual education for queer, for trans people, for bisexuality, for any of this, that's why there's so much emphasis on what we've done in porn as kind of the gospel, and why there's so much more, it's so much more ingrained in people's heads that this is this person.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I've ever actually said that, but you're completely right on that.
Yeah.
You know, their sex ed for straight people is horrendous already, and then for queer people, it's like even worse.
I'm trying to remember like, what my first straight sex ed education video was. I think it was like in the 1960s version. Watching childbirth. And I was, yeah.
Like it does not serve people well. It doesn't talk about intimacy. It doesn't talk about, you know, anything real life, in my opinion. And especially so for queer people. Like it's just not even talked about. There's such erasure. And that's sex ed, but that's also dominant society, you know, dominant culture. It is getting better a little bit, but, you know, not enough. So, yes, to what you're saying there, I think it's absolutely true that queer people in particular, we are getting our sex ed. We're getting our understanding of our own sexuality through watching videos. And that doesn't always serve us super, super well. I think it serves us better if we seek out, you know, indie performers, if we seek out home videos, amateur stuff. But if somebody is getting their education from, you know, studio porn, or getting their education from people who are big names, it's not going to show the nuance. And yeah, they're going to take certain things way more seriously than they should.
our friend Andrew Gerza. I think you've been interviewed with him on his podcast.
Yeah, just a couple weeks ago.
So we had him on, and we've been on his podcast too. He's a great guy. He gave us an education on the ways in which we ourselves might be ableist in episode 25 of Daddy Issues by asking what our lives would be like if we were in a wheelchair tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking, you know, is recognizing bisexuality in ourselves part of the education on biphobia?
Yes and no. That's going to be my very, very insightful answer. Expand upon that, I would say you don't need to be bi to respect bi people. I don't need to be black to respect black people. You don't need to be trans to respect trans people. However, I think the reality of the human condition is that way more people are bisexual than I've ever put a label on it. Because if I go back to my definition of bisexuality, which really emphasizes that capacity to be attracted and not necessarily in the same way or in the same depth, I think many people, most people, I don't know. I don't want to put a number on it, but I think many, many, many people have the capacity to be a little bit bisexual with the right person in the right situation, you know, when the moon's in the right phase. It's like, if we think of it being that expansive, then yes, many of us are bi, and the ability to recognize that and label it and sit with it and, you know, accept that about oneself is huge, because then there wouldn't be the stigma. You know, if everybody came out and was like, yeah, I'm a little bi sometimes, it wouldn't be something to be afraid of, and it wouldn't be something that was shameful or that was seen as like this repudiation of oneself.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Matt, have you ever had to buy a bi time, like a threesome with a guy and a girl?
Not yet. That's the trip point. We're all a little bi.
Yeah. Or have the capacity to be, and whether you are or not is almost irrelevant to it, because people who are comfortable with themselves are not upset at other people exploring. And that I think is like the real core part of probably a lot of like discrimination, bigotry, is this idea that, you know, what other people do really doesn't impact me or you or anyone else.
I want to express my own.
Your bi out there.
I'm getting my bi out there.
Get your bi on.
It's been a while. The last time was me and my husband when we were first dating, because I already had a female fuck buddy and I had guy fuck buddies, because I've always been kind of bisexual. But when it came to relationships, I always had relationships with guys. I just never had relationships with girls. And when my husband and I were dating, I said, okay, so I do this. Like, I like having sex with girls every once in a while. Like, it's, you know, it's part of it. I mean, hopefully you'll accept this. And he was like, yeah, cool. Can we both do it? And I'm like, have you ever done that? And he's like, nope. I'm like, okay, sure, honey. And so we had a three. It was really great. And he really loved him. He was really good. He dived right in there. And we wanted to do it again, but we never really found anybody else female that we connected with. That's pretty much been like the last time. It's pretty much I got married and then, you know.
That was the end of that.
Yeah, I kind of dried up a little bit. Might need to get back to it a little bit.
You should. You
know, pandemic, it's a little, But hopefully, because I do miss the front holes.
Yeah. And just like there's different energy from different people. Yeah. You know, it's just variety. And, you know, as a bi person, I like some variety. I wanted to, part of me hates labels, but part of me really loves labels because, you know, it's the data scientist part of me loves that kind of stuff. So what you said about like enjoying women sexually, but men, like romantically, I guess, there is a terminology for that. You are somebody who I would call homosexual, bisexual, homoromantic.
Right.
And I think that if people understood kind of those distinctions, those shades of meaning, like I'm actually the same way. I'm bisexual, but I've never had a close relationship outside of friendship with a woman. So, and I don't know that I really could, you know, I just am wired more to homoromanticism, but you know, bodies are bodies. Everybody has a bunch of the same nerve endings. Like sex is easy.
Yeah. And sex is easy? Wait a second, what? what?
It is, but we make it so difficult.
It's the easiest thing in the world.
We also have a very binary definition of what love is, right? Mm-hmm. And there's actually a whole variety of ways to express and be in love. And we think of, you know, that one way, the Eros, you know, get your sex on way, as being the only true expression of love. But there are a lot of them.
And there's even different dynamics that people are exploring now of more like poly and open relationships that reimagine who even is part of that love. You know, it doesn't have to be two people. And I mean, I think that there's been some really, really amazing kind of changes in public perception, you know, over the last decades, I would say. And then that's countered by this like really provincial, small-minded attitudes that are still out there and are still so deeply ingrained, not to get too deep into politics, but it's there. And, you know, that's always been one of my biggest issues with gay culture. Because like I think you said in your lovely intro of me, I am bi, openly so, and I do bisexual porn, but I mostly do gay porn. And I live mostly in gay male spaces, which I enjoy and am very, you know, comfortable in and am very, very grateful to be part of as a trans person. But, you know, I live in gay spaces, and what I see is so much misogyny, so much like closed-mindedness, so much of, you know, unless you're white and straight acting and 6 foot tall and have an 8-inch dick, you're not gay. You know, the way they define it. It's like, it's just super, super narrow definitions, not very inclusive. And, you know, as a trans man, certainly the gay cultural obsession with phallocentrism and big dicks, not just have a dick, but have a big one, is just like so, so limiting. Like it leaves out so many people, not just trans people, but like so many other men, so many other gay men end up like really, really uncomfortable with their bodies. There's so much body dysmorphia and eating disorders and all that in the community. And just like, those are the really toxic parts of gay masculinity. And yet there's so much about that culture that I love and that is, you know, authentic for me because that's who I am, like it or not. But I have like those real, really strong critiques of it.
You are so wonderful to talk to. I could listen to your voice forever. Seriously, I'm going to thank you for everything in your explanation of transsexuality and for bisexuality. We're going to move on to our next segment. And you'll like this one. If you want to add to any of this, you can. It's been a while since Matt has laid the smackdown on someone. Old man rant. So our segment is where we get up on our soapbox and we yell at something that pisses us off. And what do you have for us today, Mr. Fuller?
What do I have for us today? I think America needs to just go on a general strike, Coop. I think that this bullshit that is the governance from the executive branch of our federal government is fucking bullshit and needs to stop. So we just need to stop being complicit, right? Like going along with the system as some level of consent that we think this shit is okay. And this is not okay as a way to be governed. So number one, general strike. Let's do that shit. Number two, what the fuck, GOP? Holy shit. Like, we gave up on you when you put Donald Trump as your figurehead, but yet still we were like, there must be some reasonable human beings within that institution, right? Because just because you want lower taxes and less regulation doesn't necessarily have to mean that you want to shoot the fags. Like, they don't have to go together. And yet, we have Senator Mike Lee from Ohio, who is so dumb that he got COVID at the White House super spreader event and went home to say that, you know what the point is of America? The point is prosperity, not democracy. Because who the fuck thought America was about democracy, folks? No, you were wrong for the last 200 some odd years. It is prosperity, right? And while Mike is high on COVID, wherever he's hiding, we have Attorney General Barr, who's making up investigations about stolen ballots in the river that doesn't exist because it's not even a creek, much like a ditch, and they're not even stolen. You just had a temporary fucking contract worker throw out some ballots because nobody told him what the fuck to do with it. And yet, we have that as an announcement from the Justice Department within 30 days of an election because Bob fucking Barr decided that he knows better than decades of institutional knowledge and has decided that it's okay to talk about false investigations that might cause people to question if their vote counts because the GOP is no longer about quiet voter suppression. We are just full on fucking going to suppress the vote in every goddamn way they can. For example, we've got Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. What's the Secretary of State finally going to do? He's going to give us Hillary's emails because that's what we need. Hillary's emails will solve peace in the Middle East. They will give us a two-state solution. They will cause Iran to back down from their nuclear desires. They will make Saudi Arabia stop killing advocates of democracy. That's all we need is Hillary emails. And meanwhile, we have Lindsey Graham, who refuses to take a COVID test because he is hell determined to confirm the handmaiden to the Supreme Court starting next week. And if he was to miss a debate in South Carolina last night because of his positive COVID status, he couldn't get on his handmaiden duty come Monday, and he is still a closeted motherfucker. Lady G, come on. And he is going down this time. So, yes, give his opponent, Jamie Harrison, all the dollars you can. And that brings us to Senator Mitch fucking McConnell, who is once again on handmaiden duty. And, oh, you know, for the last 2 months, hasn't stopped by the White House because he knows that their COVID prevention strategy is non-existent. Thanks for mentioning that the way a leader does, Mitch. And you know what? I'm so glad that as the leader of the Senate, you are concerned about passing a stimulus package for everyday Americans, for the flight attendants, the pilot crews, the ground crews, the mechanics, and everyone else that is, oh, I don't know, 30 days away from not being able to pay their rent, their grocery bills, and everything else. But in your wisdom, you've made sure we're not going to deal with that because there's a handmaiden in waiting. And finally, to wrap it up, we have Bob fucking Dole, who stepped out of complete obscurity yesterday to mention on Twitter that he still has some friends and they don't like Donald Trump. And what that has to do with the United States Election Debate Commission is beyond me. So crawl back in the hole and go back to snorting your Viagra, Bob Dole, because we don't want to hear from you. And on that note, we don't really want to hear from the entire GOP party because you're hate-filled shitheads.
Ever again.
That's all I got.
That was a beautiful, beautiful rant. I am so glad that I got to witness that.
Do you got anything to add?
I couldn't say anything to top that. That was beautiful.
I don't bother anymore. I mean, I tried to like... Oh, never mind. He's going.
He's got it. He's got it covered.
He got that one too. Good. That was a mouthful. I feel like you really put the hammer down on that.
Well, thank you. And now that I've had that cathartic moment, you know, that's a show. I want to start by thanking our guest, Trip Richards. You were incredible. This is, first of all, to Coop's point, your voice, you could just read like a grocery receipt to me.
I would be there. Say broccoli.
Clay.
You kumquat.
Back when I used to webcam, people were always like, oh, you should be a flight attendant or something with your voice, which I thought was hilarious. I guess this would be a bad time to be a flight attendant given your rant.
Yeah. So, yeah, you chose wisely.
Yeah.
Good. I did. It was a much better business.
Yeah, you're kicking it.
So, yeah, thank you for being a guest and sharing so much of your experience and your insight. I think it's really beautiful and wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me here and giving that space to, you know, rant about my stuff.
Please come back anytime you want to. We would love to have you back on the podcast. You are wonderful to talk to, and you're an excellent guest.
Thank you.
On our next episode, we're going to talk about the oldest profession in the world. Sex work. Hustlers, strippers, prostitution, rub and tuggers, whatever it is, that gets people off, we have that to talk about with sex worker John Shields. And we're going to discuss his ups and downs of sex work, especially in working with people with disabilities, and why decriminalization and unionization is so important to this industry. Plus, the library is open on the book Neon Girls by Jennifer Cooley, and we're going to discuss that book and its journey towards a sex worker positive world. Until our next podcast, thanks for listening to Daddy Issues.
Thanks for listening to Daddy Issues. Podcast transcript and notes available at gaydaddyissues.com.